So we're up to Makos Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. Okay, we're almost done. We have about six more dafim. Okay, so today we're going to do Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, and we're going to start, I think, from the sixth or seventh line. Okay, I think it's Kama Yochal Min HaTevel. We're up to that's where we got to in the last week. Okay, so it's about six or seven lines down. So there the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, Kama Yochal Min HaTevel. So what's the shear, what's the amount for you to be liable to bring a Korban Chatas? So the debate is, Rabbi Shimon said, that any amount. And the Chachamim said that you have to eat a Kezias. So we have that debate. Is the shear a Kol Shehu, or is the shear a Kezias? So, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon said to the Chachamim, Rabbi Shimon says, all you need is a kol shehu, any amount. So Rabbi Shimon said to the Chachamim, he said, don't you admit to me that if you eat an ant, then you're chayef? So the Chachamim said back to Rabbi Shimon, well, that's different, because that's like the whole creature. In other words, he says, Mipnei Shehit Kibriyasa. That's the way it was created. So Rabbi Shimon says back to the Rabbanon, well, a kernel of wheat is also, that's the way it was created as well. So you have this debate here where the Chachamim say, no, it's only like an insect. If someone eats a whole ant, so then even if less than a kezias, you're chayef. But according to Rabbi Shimon, he says, no, even a kernel of wheat. So that's tevel, you would also be chayef. Okay? So now the Gemara is going to bring a debate on how to understand this machlokas. By the way, the basic chakira to understand, how do you understand this halach of birya? Right? So is it basically that do we say birya is its own iser? Right? There's a halacha called birya, it's its own prohibition, even if there's less than a kezias. Or could be there's a principle that we know, it's called achshavei. This is what some of the achronim say. There's a principle called achshavei. What's achshavei? That you consider the thing to be chashuv. In other words, normally speaking, we say the shear should be a kezias. But maybe if you eat an entire ant, for example, so you are machshivit, you are saying, oh, this is chashuv because I'm eating a whole ant. In other words, is it a separate halacha of birya, or is it based on the principle of achshivit? That's some want to make that distinction of how to debate of how we understand this concept of birya. In any case, Amar Rabbi Bibi, Amar Rav Shimon ben Lakish, machlokes bechita. So their debate is a debate when it comes to grains of wheat, or an entire grain of wheat, an entire kernel of wheat. So are you chayav because of birya, even though it doesn't have a kezias? Avol bekemach, divrei hakol, kezias. But according to the Reish Lakish, according to Shimon Lakish, if it's, let's say, flour, you ground the wheat kernel into a flour, then everyone agrees that's a kezias, because that's not a birya anymore, that's flour, right? Maybe a kernel of wheat, that's chashuv important by itself. But flour, that's not a birya, that's not an enti unto itself. He says, no, even Rabbi Shimon would say, you're always chayav for kol shehu, when it comes to flour. Okay? Question is, right? So according to Rabbi Shimon, if you look here in Rashi explains this. Kach machlokes bezu, because sa Rabbi Shimon mechol ha'isurin kol shehu lamakos. So it's interesting. We always used to think that the shear is a kezias. That's not what Rabbi Shimon holds. He holds that really the shear is kol shehu, even the smallest amount. V'lo amru kezias ela le'inyan korban al shigas kores. He says that when it comes to bringing a korban, so there, if you eat something for which the chiyuv is kares, if you eat a kezias of it, so then you would bring a korban. But for malchus, you only need to eat a kol shehu. So there's no difference if it's flour, or it's a kernel of wheat, or it's an ant. Any prohibition of eating to get malchus at kol shehu your chayef. For a korban, so then you need a kezias. So now, the Gemara is going to ask on Rabbi Yirmiyah, and
So we have Malkokas where the Chatzi Shir is Deraisa. We're asking Chatzi Shir is Deraisa. So now we're saying, now it's Chatzi Shir Deraisa, but Chatzi Shir is even Chayv Malkas.
I would imagine that the debate about Chatzi Shir is only, would not be a contra of Shimon.
Shimon says, not only is it Deraisa, but you even get Malkas.
Right. Right. So I would imagine that debate is only within the Chachamim, not Rabbi Shimon.
Right.
And so Tanan. So we have a question, Rabbi Yirmiyah. Amar lehen Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon said to the Chachamim, "Iatem moldin libochol namala kol shishu chayev. Don't you admit to me if you eat an ant of any size in your chayev? So how is it any different than a kernel of wheat?" Amrulo, the Chachamim said back to Rabbi Shimon, "Bibnei shehi kivir yasa." Because it is whole as when it was created. It was always, so that the din of a birya is, it was created as an ant. It says also kernel of wheat, the way it was created, it was whole. So the Gemara wants to infer from there, chita in kemachlo. So the fact that Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah responded to the Chachamim and said that, oh, a kernel of wheat is as it was created. So therefore he would only disagree when it comes to a kernel of wheat, but not if it was ground into flour. So how could Rabbi Yirmiyah say he would even agree, he would even argue when it comes to flour? So the Gemara rejects that position. The Gemara says, L'divrayim kamar lahu. No, really Rabbi Shimon is arguing, he's saying, according to you, the Rabbanan, this is what you should hold. L'didi, according to me, afilo kemach nami, I hold that flour, that's also kol shehu. I hold that the shear, when it comes to makos, to get lashes for forbidden foods, is kol shehu. But, and therefore even flour. El lidicho, but according to you, who hold that with flour you need a kezias, odu li mihas techita achas kibriyasa, admit to me at the very least, that with a whole grain, so you get makos even less than a kezias, because it's a whole kernel of wheat. So, the Rabbanan, but what did the Rabbanan say? Biryas nishama chashuva, chita lo chashuva. Said it's the birya of a nishama has importance. So there's a difference between a whole entity that has a nishama, which is an ant, a living creature, versus a kernel of grain, which you would not be chayav for. So let's see Tosfos, how Tosfos understands this. Look, the one Tosfos on the Amud. The Tosfos says, the Rabbanan birya de shaba chashuva chita lo chashuva. So Tosfos is going to try to explain the answer of the Chachamim on the question of Rabbi Shimon, right? In other words, the Chachamim need to explain why do they require kezias, not even one kernel of wheat? Why is that not considered tevel? Rabbi Shimon said to them, if you eat an ant, so a whole ant, then you're chayav for a kol shehu because of birya. So also by a whole kernel of wheat, you should also be chayav for kol shehu. And the Rabbanan responded that an ant is different because it has a neshama, and therefore it's more chashiv. Now Tosfos asked the following. Tosfos says, Tema, I have a question. How can you say that only with the birya, has to have a neshama, then you're birya? The parak gid hanasha, read on, shiny gid de biryahu. A gid hanasha, that's the sciatic nerve. So there you are chayav, even if it's for birya, velo batil. So let's say you have, I don't know, a few pieces of meat, and one of them is a gid hanasha. So normally speaking, if you have a few pieces of meat, and then it's batel, the piece of meat is batel barov. Let's say they're not cooked together. You just have three or four different pieces of meat, and somehow you can't tell which is the sciatic nerve, which isn't the sciatic nerve. So we normally say it's batel barov, that we assume if you have a piece, it's probably not the gid hanasha. However, the gid hanasha is considered a birya, and therefore, if it's not batel, so wait a second. How is a gid hanasha considered a birya? An ant is a living creature. A gid hanasha is a limb. V'avagad l'espe neshama. Gid hanasha, it does not have a neshama. It's called a gid hanasha even if it's not attached to the animal. Even if it's detached, it's still called a gid hanasha. It's still called a birya. So how can the Chacham here say that only with a birya that has a neshama it's considered a birya for all the dinim, for all the halachos in the Torah? So Tosa's answer is v'yishlomer dehachi ka'amru. So this is what they're about to mean to say. Shiny gid de biryahu. That gid is gid hanasha different because of birya. What does that mean? Kevan de asya mi brias neshama. Since the gid hanasha was part of an animal that had a neshama, so therefore the kevan de asya mi brias neshama shabah have birya. Okay, so now we got a further refined and more expansive definition. We're not talking necessarily about only a living creature, but even a limb that comes from a living creature, like a gid hanasha. So the Gemara says, Tosa says, but wait a second. V'lo dira, that doesn't seem to be the case. Tanevela de kaasi me birias neshama v'ach bichein lo v'birya. Let's say you have an nevela. What's an nevela? It's an animal that was killed without shechita. So there, let's say you have a small piece of nevela. There, you don't get malchus for a small piece of nevela. You need a kezias. I don't understand. Gid hanasha comes from a living being, so that's called a birya. So nevela should also be called a nevela should also be called a birya because it comes from a living thing, right? But because it's vav birya, love a birya. So the ella, now we have to redefine what's the definition of a birya. The ella al korchach. So rather, what do you have to say? Hatam taloi. The reason to consider the food like a birya depends on the following. The kol oved shmo kishenechtach, that if something loses its name, that something that has a shame, and it loses its shame when it's cut into pieces, heve birya. Okay, we'll try to explain afterwards why this might be so. But it seems that the halacha is that a birya is only something that is identified as something, and then when you cut it in half, it is no longer identified with it. So he says, so therefore, so a gid hanasha, if you cut a gid hanasha in half, it is no longer called a gid hanasha. It's called a piece of a gid hanasha. So therefore, when it's a whole gid hanasha, it's called a birya, when it is whole. And nicha minavela. So now, it's good. We could answer now the question from the Vela. Why? Because eino oveda shma, that if you cut an Vela in half, you know what? It's still called a Vela. Lifamim af kishidatza koras a Vela. Because the name of the Vela is not on the animal that died when it was whole. But even it's called a Vela when it was cut up. Ulakach love birya. Therefore, it's not a birya. Aval gid oved et shemo aydi shedechtach. But a gid hadasha loses its name after it's cut, because after it's cut in half, it's no longer called a gid. It's called a chatichas gid. What's the rationale for that? Why would you say that would make a difference? That is what Tosas here is saying is that you have a birya, you cut it in half. If it loses, if you don't call it like what it was beforehand, then its original state is a birya. But if it has the same name, whether or not you cut it, it's not a birya. Why should that make a difference? So one answer that's brought down is that since the Torah explained that the shame hamachal ha'aser says don't eat this gid or don't eat this tame bird. So it's as if when the Torah said don't eat this gid hanasha, it's as if the Torah is telling us that don't eat this with any in any amount. Okay, any amount, meaning when it's but it has to be whole. So therefore, another when the Torah said, don't eat this food, don't eat the Gita Nasha. What it means is don't eat the whole Gita. Once you eat the whole Gita Nasha, so then you've violated that Isser. But in the Vela,
the pasuk says,
it's the whole thing. But nevela, even a piece of a nevela is called a nevela. And yeah. also by tevel, it also never explains the it just says v'lichalu. So the prohibition is a kazayas. Since the Torah doesn't explicitly state that the shear. So in other words, achila in general, when Torah says don't eat something, so that well, how much is achila? That's a kezias. But when the Torah says don't eat a git hanasha, so it means if you eat the whole git hanasha, you have violated that. But when it comes to a nevela, the Torah didn't say don't eat the nevela. It just says, and the truth is, even a part of it's a nevela. So therefore, it goes by the definition of achila, which is a kezias. Right, and right. But in other words, since by nevela, peace is also called nevela, so then we don't go by, it's not a whole nevela. You're not chayav for a whole nevela. Because nevela is not defined as something whole. So therefore, when it comes to nevela, we go by the shear of a kezias. So that's sort of one distinction that Tosfos is making. Whether, when you cut it up, does it have the same name? If it does, then the whole thing is not a birya. And however, like nevela, which is, it has the same name, whether it's whole or not, so then it's not a birya. Okay, so that's the first thing that Tosfos says. Now, about ksas koshali, a little bit of question Tosfos says. Mai ka'omar hacha b'riyas nesheva chashivalei. But didn't the Gemara say that it doesn't depend on whether, it seems that it depends on whether the thing has a neshama. I'm sorry, it's not talking about priyas neshama. The Gemara's answer is what? What was the Rabbanan's answer? The Rabbanan's answer was that nemala, an ant, has a neshama. So Tosfos is saying, okay, Tosfos is making an interesting distinction between, let's say Nemala and Gita Nasha on the one hand, and Nevela on the other hand. That Nemala and Gita Nasha, when you cut it in half, it loses its name, and Nevela, it doesn't lose its name. But that's not what the Gemara said. When the Rabbanan were giving the answer and explaining why you're chayav for a kol shehu, even the smallest amount, what reason did it give? It's because it is a neshama. It had a neshama. So the Yesh Lobar, so the Tosfos answers, Dili Devarav Derev Shibot Abri, that really they said it according, the Rabbanan said this according to Rav Shimon's opinion. In other words, this is how Chama responds to Rav Shimon. Lididan, according to us, Afilu Nami Is Be Neshama Lo Have Birya. Even if we believe that even if it has a neshama, it's not necessarily a birya, not necessarily considered a birya, because when you cut it and it doesn't lose its name, so therefore it's not a birya. But ela l'didach, but according to you, Rabbi Shimon, the birya who that anything that's whole is a birya, and even when it's cut, it doesn't lose its name. Never, he says, Odi li miha de kevon de leka neshama de batla. But admit to me that you would hold this only if it has a neshama because of its importance. But if it doesn't have a neshama, then you should hold like us. It depends on whether when you cut it, it loses its name or not. Since it doesn't have a neshama and it's not chashuva, not important, then admit to us that its amount is only with the kezias. debatla, because it would be canceled, it would be nullified. So in other words, in summary, Tosus asks, why is Gidanasha considered a birya? Don't we say that only a birya of neshama? They first want to ask that it comes from a neshama. They say, but what about nevela? And the answer, that anything that even if after it was cut and it's not complete, it's still called the same name, that's not called a birya. And only if it loses its name when it's cut is called a birya. And the Torah forbade it in any such way, even less than a kezias. And when the Rabbanan said to Rabbi Shimon that only a birya of a neshama is called a birya, they really meant to say to him that even though you hold that even when the Torah doesn't explicitly state the name of the forbidden food, it's still considered like a birya because of its chashivus. Nevertheless, admit to us that you hold this only if it has a neshama. But if it doesn't have a neshama like wheat, then admit to us at least that you would not be chayav without a kezayis. So that's sort of how the chachamim would respond to Rabbi Shimon. I also want to point out, yeah.
Rabbi, can I ask one question? Is Tosus implying that Rabbanan don't hold that Nemala is a birya and you're chayav reading Nemala? They're only saying shitaseich.
No. They're saying no. They hold that Nemala is a birya because when you cut it, it's no longer an ant.
Oh, okay, but neshama doesn't play a role.
Right.
Rabbi Shimon holds it because it's neshama.
Right.
And you admit that there's no neshama in achidah.
Right. That's it. Exactly. Okay. Exactly. So first of all, halacha lamasa, what do we hold? So the Shulchan Aruch holds, I'm going to read you, the Shulchan Aruch holds that a birya, which is either a nemala or an of tameh or gida nasha and evra minachai, and a beitza that has an afroach, a bird. So all, and similar to them, it's not batel berov. That's one. In other words, the Gemara here is talking about a birya, you get malchus if you have less of the kezias. But there's another definition, there's another very important factor when it comes to a birya. A birya is never batel. Sometimes you have, let's say for example, a fly falls in your soup, and the fly is less than 1/60th of the soup. I say batel b'shishim, right? The insect is less than 1/60th. So the truth is, if it was crushed up, then it wouldn't be a problem. But if you know that it's a whole ant that's in your soup, I mean, you won't want to eat it anyway. But if a whole ant is in your soup, so then it's not batel. It's significant because it's a birya. So all of these things, get a nasha every minachai, an egg that has a bird, they're not batel, even if they're mixed with a mixture of one to 1,000. But it's only a din of birya if it was the case that it had chiyus. So we reject Rabbi Shimon. We exclude a chita. We say it has to have had something. It has to come from something living, and it has to be something that was forbidden from the beginning of its creation. To exclude an oaf tahor that became a nevela, or shor haniska. Okay. So in other words, there's a halacha lamaisa. There's another reason why a nevela is not called a birya. Another reason for why nevela is not a birya, halacha lamaisa, we only gave two conditions. Halacha lamaisa, I think there are four conditions that make something a birya. Number one, it has to come from something living. Number two, it has to have been forbidden from the moment of creation. That would exclude, a tahor bird that became a nevela, and also, let's say, a shor haniska, let's say an ox that was supposed to be put to death. It also has to be complete, that if you would split it, that it would no longer have the same name. That excludes chelef, forbidden fats. If you cut a forbidden fat in half, you know what it is? It's still chelef. Okay? And also, it has to be shalem, has to be complete. So those are the four conditions. Coming from something living, right, it has to be forbidden from the beginning of its creation. It has to be complete. And if it would be split, it would no longer retain its original name. Okay, so that's one. So the birya comes.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't understand how three and four work together.
What was three again? It has to be complete.
And then it can't be split.
No. I'm sorry. It can't be something that if it was split, it would still be called the same thing. So, for example, if you cut a Gita Nasha in half and you look at a half of a Gita Nasha, you know what you call it? Half of a Gita Nasha. If you take an entire piece of Chelev and you cut it in half, you know what that half piece of Chelev is called? Chelev.
Okay.
Got so it. Right. So that, yep. Now, let me be clear. It has to be something that's complete and something that doesn't lose its status if it would be. That would lose its name if it would be cut in half. Okay. Okay. So
here, come here.
Yeah, Miriam. I just unmuted Marty.
I know. So, I'm doing this sound to work here before.
What?
Sorry.
No, I just unmuted everyone. So does he have a question? No? Okay.
We just lost you.
I'm right here. Okay. Okay. No, okay. Well, I'm continuing now.
Okay.
Sure. So now I want to point out one more thing about Birya that we're going to move on. And that is, when else does Birya come into play? Not only in terms of forbidden foods, but it comes into play in one other issue. Anyone know when else it comes into play in halacha? Comes also a little bit different, but also on the positive side, there's a discussion as to what birchas hananim you make on a birya. So let's say, it's really not our Gemara, but just since we're talking about birya, so let's say there's a discussion in the Gemara in Brachos. He said, the Amora was asked, what bracha do you make on a salted olive? Okay? So, or what bracha achrona do you make? So there's a discussion, and it points out that if you have a grape or a pomegranate seed, so maybe you require bracha achrona. Why would you require bracha achrona? Even though there's no kezias, if you have a whole grape, then maybe that's a birya, and you would be chayav for a bracha. Again, it's different. It doesn't come from a living thing. This is a little bit different, but this probably has to do with chashivus. This probably has to do with that. And it's not clear whether the Talmud Bavli argues in the Rishamim when it comes to this, but this is a little bit different. What we're talking about now is, let's say, something that is, you know, where you get malchus for, or something which is not batel, even be'elef, doesn't nullify, even one in a thousand, if it has the status of birya, if it meets those four conditions. When it comes to hilchos brachos, so it seems that there are different rules here for birya, and there's a possibility that maybe if you have an entire grape, again, that sometimes food is considered chashiv, important, qualitatively and sometimes quantitatively. So when you have a kezias quantitatively, so then you've eaten a chashiv amount, and therefore you would require a bracha achroda. Maybe also if you have a whole grape, so that's like a birya. So qualitatively, that would also necessitate a bracha achroda, even if you don't have a bracha achroda. And the Rishonim have this. Debate about, there's sort of three different ways about if you have a fruit that has a pit, is that considered a birya or not without the pit? They have that. But Lamaisa, we actually try to avoid, the Shulchan Aruch tells us that we actually try to avoid to have, let's say, you shouldn't have just a whole grape and not a kezias, because then it's a suffix, a doubt, what bracha achrona it should be. So if you have like a whole grape, you should make sure to have not a half a grape, a few halves of grapes. But if you have a whole grape, try to have more grapes so you have a kezias, so you for sure have to recite a bracha achrona. So those are the instances where we have the concept of birya, both from the prohibition and from the mitzvah. Okay. So let's continue. The Gemara then says of Tanya Kavasi Rabbi Yirmiya, back in the Gemara, Rabbi Shimon Omer Koshu Lamakos Lo Amru Kizayas Ela Inyan Korban. So we have a support for Rabbi Yirmiya that Rabbi Shimon holds that you're chayav for any shear for Makos, and they only say Kizayas when it comes to a chayav Korban. Okay. Let's continue on to the next Mishnah. The next Mishnah says is a continuation to the first Mishnah in the Perek, and it counts other prohibitions for which you get Malchus on them. The Mishnah says, Ha'ochel bikurim ad shelo kara aleihem. If you a kohet who eats the first fruits before the owner fulfilled the mitzvah to read the parsha of Arami Ovid Avi. What's Bikurim? So Bikurim is that there's a mitzvah that the owner of the field should bring the first of his crops to the Beis HaMikdash, even one fruit. The Pasuk says in Parshki Savo, V'lakachta merishis kol pri adama asher tavi b'artzecha, v'samta v'atani. You can take the first of all your crops and you put it in a basket. V'alachta el ha'makom asher yivchar Hashem lokech shkein shmo sham. You're going to go to the place that Hashem chooses, that's Yerushalayim. This only applies when there is a Beis HaMikdash, and only in Eretz Yisrael, and only with the Shivas Haminim. Okay? So, the halacha here is, the first opinion is, that if the Kohen eats these Bikurim before the guy who brings the fruit has to place it in a basket, right in front of the in the Azara, he has to put it down by the Mizbeach, and then he's supposed to say stuff. He's supposed to say Arabi Dovi Avi, right? That's what we say on Pesach night. We say that Arabi Dovi Avi, those psukim. So let's say the Kohen eats it before the owner said these psukim. And also, let's say a Kohen who eats Kadshe Kadashim, Chutz Laklaim. Let's say if you ate the Kadshe Kadashim, holy foods. What are holy foods? The more severe kachim. Ola, chatas, asham, shalmi tzibor, lechmapanim, menachos. So all those things, these kachik kadashi, if you eat them outside the mishkan in the mikdash area, so by klayim were the curtains in the mishkan, and basically there was a wall of the azara. So if you eat it outside the azara, all right, so then you would get malchus. And also, if you eat kachim kadashim, maser sheni chutz lechoma, if you eat the less severe kachim, like what are they? Shlabim, toda, el nazir, bechor, maser behema, korim pesach, and maser sheni that they eat in Yerushalayim, right? That's every first, second, fourth, and fifth year after you give a tithe maser to the Levi after, and also after the truma to the Kohen, then you have to take 1/10 of your crops and eat it in Yerushalayim, or you have to redeem it and use the money in Yerushalayim. So if someone eats the Maaser Sheni outside the Yerushalayim, so also a shover etzem be Pesach HaTahor, also if you break a bone, Korban Pesach, and then you violate etzem l'tishbu bo, all these cases, harezeh lo kearbaim, in all these cases, you get Malchus.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
You mentioned Ola. So eating an Ola is violating an Easter Essek, because it's all supposed to go on the Mizbeach. So if you eat the Ola outside of, you're never supposed to eat an Ola. If you eat it outside of the Azara, you also will get Malchus for that?
Yeah, that's what it seems. It's Kodshe Kadashim. I know, you're right. Ola, you're not supposed to eat at all.
Right.
So yeah, Ola, you're not supposed to eat at all. But it says, if you did eat it, so right, it says Khalil. But there's also a lav to eat any korbanos outside the right. Mikdash area.
So you're right. If you eat inside the Azara, you'd only be over an S. If you eat outside the Azara, you're also over an
Lav. Yeah, I think so. It makes sense. I think you're probably right. You're probably right.
Yeah.
So, okay. But now, aval hamosir betahor, let's say you didn't eat the whole korban Pesach at night. You violated the Torah prohibition of losasir menu ad boker. Right? So, by the way, let me get to breaking the bone. So we had mentioned in an earlier week that the Torah, the Mishnah didn't list all cases where you get Malchus. So we saw there, I think it was a Rashi and a Tosfos, both said that the Mishnah only mentioned those cases which have a little bit of a chiddush, that you would not have thought otherwise. Question is, the love of eating a bone, breaking a bone of a Korban Pesach, that's pretty obvious. It's explicit in the Torah. So what why is the Mishnah telling us this? Because maybe you would argue that, let's say you break a bone with bones that have some juice inside. Let's say you want to eat the juice inside.
The marrow, right.
So maybe the ase of eating the kachim, if there's marrow inside, then you're filling the mitzvah of achilas kachim. So maybe that overrides the lav of breaking a bone, and nevertheless, this is what the Pnei Yeshua writes, nevertheless, no, you violate the lav. Now, if you leave over, right, losir menabok, you leave over some Korban Pesach meat, v'ashover b'tameh, and also if you break a bone with a Korban Pesach that's tameh, ain't a lokar b'ayim, you don't get malchus, okay? Because by no sir, why? It's a lav hanitak laaseh, because you can fix the assay because you burn it. And by breaking a bone of a Pesach Tabeh, it's a drasha where the Pasuk says, V'etzel tishbu bo, bo below be psul. That the prohibition is only with a Korban Pesach that's kosher, not with a psul. And now we're going to say the famous, that we saw this already in the Gemara, but this is the Mishnah that the Gemara in the previous daf was referring to. Hanotel eim al habanim. If you take a mother together with children, and that's where you violate the lav, right, of not sending away the, it says, lo tikach eim al banim, don't take the mother with the kids. So let's say you do that. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, loka, you get malchus, because it's a lav shekadabo asay. The asay precedes the lav, both in the pasuk and the asay could come before the lav. Ve'eino mishalech, and you don't have to send it away afterwards. V'chomri mishalech ve'eino loka. V'chomri say, no, this is a lav anitak lasay, and even though the lav is before it, you still can fix the lav, and you send it away, and you don't get malchus. Zeh klal, this is the rule. Kol mitzvahs lo taseg, sheyesh bo kuma asay, ein chayavim aleha. Any mitzvahs lo taseg that has an mitzvahs asay associated with it, you don't get malchus. Just you do the asay, and then you don't violate the lav. And that's where we saw the debate between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. According to Rav Yochanan, he holds bito v'lo bitlo, meaning that you would not get malchus until you're actually mevatel the possibility, you cancel the possibility of doing the assay, that you can no longer do the assay anymore. And Reish Lakish says it's kimo v'lo kimo. It's that what? That when, let's say Beis Din tells you, burn the Korban Pesach meat, and you refuse to do so, so then you would get malchus, according to Reish Lakish. However, Rav Yochanan would say, you don't get malchus until you cancel out the possibility of ever performing this this mitzvah. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to explain. Now, Amar Rava Bar Bar Chana, Amar Rav Yochanan. So Rav Yochanan said the following, Divrei Rebbe Kiva Stim Sa'ah. In many Mishnayos, Rebbe typically brought the opinion of Rebbe Akiva and quoted it stam as an anonymous Mishnah. And he didn't mention that Rebbe Akiva said it. Rebbe Yochanan heard that this is what Rebbe Akiva held. So in other words, Rebbe Yochanan believes that Rebbe Akiva is the author of this Mishnah, or he's the one, he's the basis of this Mishnah. Right. And this is also similar in the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, stam Mishnah,
Meir,
and Stam Tosef is Rav Nechemia, Stam Sifra is Rabbi Yehuda, and as Marty pointed out, that these, they all learn from Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so in any case, but Avachacham Omrim Bikurim Hanacha Makeos Bahem. But Rabbi Akiva was not the only position. The Chachamim said that when it comes to Bikurim, all you need to do to permit the Kohen to eat the Bikurim is what? Placing the basket before the Mizbeach. Placing the basket before the Mizbeach, that, because the poet of the Pasuk say, V'lakacha Kohen etena b'yadecha, v'inichol if they Mizbeach Hashem al-kecha, you'll take the basket from your hand, I'll place it in front of the Mizbeach. And so, and since the Pasuk mentions actually says this twice, and the Torah says v'natzach Hashem elkecha. So therefore, the one time tells you l'mitzvah, the second time tells you it's ma'akev, and therefore it's placing the basket of fruit in front of the Mizbeach prevents the Kohen from eating from the first fruit. But Kriya Eina Ma'akev Esbahem, but reading it, saying these psukim, that doesn't prevent the Kohen from eating the Bikurim. As soon as he puts it down, the Kohen can pick it up and start eating this. So the Gemara says, V'lema Zudiv Rabbi Shimon Stim Sa'a. Shouldn't Rabbi Yochanan have said that Mishnah is like Rabbi Shimon? And to bring a support that Rabbi Shimon holds this, why did he say it's Rabbi Akiva? We're going to see why he thought it was Rabbi Shimon. In other words, the Gemara says that, wait a second, this is where Rabbi Shimon holds this. Why didn't the Rabbi Yochanan say this is Rabbi Shimon's? So the Gemara answers, how come Ashulon, the Akiva's Rabbi Shimon Tzvirlei? Rabbi Yochanan wants to tell us that Rabbi Akiva holds like Rabbi Shimon. Okay? So apparently we know Rabbi Shimon holds like this, that you don't need kriya, all you need is hanacha in order to allow you to eat bikurim. So now we see my Rabbi Shimon. Where do we find the Rabbi Shimon holds this like this? The Tanya, because we live in a brisa, right?
So I don't understand the whole thing with Rabbi Akiva being the authority. So if Rabbi Shimon says something, how is Rabbi Akiva the undisputed authority or something?
No, so apparently Rabbi Yochanan said that when there's a Stam Mishnah, it's Rabbi Akiva. Okay, in this case.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm mixed up with. How is one time the Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir and one time it's Rabbi Akiva, and then,
So the point is that even Rabbi, apparently, that in that Gemara, but this is what some hold, and there's the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that you have three different Tanaim who when there's this anonymous Mishnah Tosefta or Sifra, so that's like a particular Tana. But each of these three individuals, they were students of Rabbi Akiva, essentially, and they learned everything from Rabbi Akiva. So in effect, even though the Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, it's Rabbi Meir who learned what he learned from Rabbi Akiva. In other words, could be that if you say, Stam Mishnah is like Rabbi Akiva, but Rabbi Akiva had different students, and maybe some students heard Rabbi Meir one way, Rabbi Akiva one way, some students heard Rabbi Akiva another way. So all we're saying here is that Riochan saying is Rabbi Akiva agrees with this Mishnah, and he's trying to tell you that even though this seems to be explicitly consistent with Rabbi Shimon, he's pointing out that Rabbi Akiva also agreed to this position. Because the Stam Mishnah is like Rabbi Akiva.
Yeah.
What
does it mean when you say Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir? So I mean, which is it, both of them are Stam Mishnah, or I mean,
yes. Yeah, so you're saying that it's Rabbi Meir who learned from Rabbi Akiva.
Apparently, a lot of the Tanaim had versions of what later became Mishnah. So they say Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi followed, adapted mainly. This is what I was here. He adapted mainly Rabbi Meir's set of Mishnayos as he learned, his version of what he learned from Rabbi Akiva. That's what I remember. So when it's Stam, it means Rabbi followed Rabbi Meir's version of what he learned from Rabbi Akiva.
Right, but by the way, it's not clear that that's what our Gemara is really saying. The Gemara in Sanhedrin is saying that the Stam, that I was saying this, if you're saying that Rav Yochanan is being consistent with the Gemara in Sanhedrin, you don't necessarily have to say that. You can also say that this argues with Sanhedrin, and maybe it's not so clear. Maybe what he's saying is that this opinion is Rabbi Akiva. Forget about this Rav Meir and these other views. In other words, it's interesting, it's called Stima, right? That there were many, it might not be like Rabbi, in other words, in our Gemara, it might not hold like that Gemara in Sanhedrin necessarily. So it might simply be, this is Rabbi Akiva's position, And then we saw elsewhere that Rabbi Shimon really held like this. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that Rabbi Akiva also holds like this. Mm. Okay? So my Rabbi Shimon, where do we find Rabbi Shimon holding like this? The Tanya, because we learn in the Brisa, Utrumas Yadcha Elu Bikurim. That the Rabbi Shimon Darshan is a pasuk which says, L'tucha lecha bisharecha, you shouldn't eat in your gates. Maser degancha, the tithing of your grain, v'siroshcha, and your wine, v'tzarecha, and your oil, v'korz b'chorcha, and the first of your animal, v'tzoncha v'chon d'ndarecha, your sheep, and everything that you made in neder, shetidor v'nivosecha, trumas yadecha. So Rabbi Shimon says, what's a trumas yadcha? That's elu bikurim. And why are they called bikurim? Because it's the lashon of yad. Because the Torah says, l'kacha kone tenem miyadecha. So your trumas yadcha, this bikurim, so he darshens out that you, and so Amar Rabbi Shimon, Ma Bazelam, what does it come to teach us? Im le ochlam chutz lechoma, if it wants to tell you that if you eat lo sucha lechol, you can't eat your bikurim outside the city walls of Yerushalayim, that's obvious. Kavachom, Rabbi Maser Akal, you can learn it from a logical explanation that from Maiser, which is lenient, right? Because Ma Maser Akal Ochel Chutz L'Chom Aloka. We know if you eat Maser Sheni, right? If you eat Maser Sheni, so first of all, Maser Sheni is more lenient than Bikurim. Why? Because Maser Sheni can be eaten by non Kohanim. So Maser Sheni, you get Malkus if you eat it outside the city walls. So certainly, you get so Bikurim Lo Kolshkin. So certainly for Bikurim, you should also get Malkus. So what must it be coming to tell you? That if you eat bikurim even before kriyas shem, it would be kriyas, before you say the psukim ramid ovid avi, then you still get malchus. Okay?
Why not before you put it down? Why not before you did enough?
Probably because we go step by step. Now there are two mitzvahs. There's one mitzvah of hanacha, and there's a separate mitzvah of achila. So those are the two mitzvahs. So I would say that even you would think that once it says hanacha, you put it down. Then you would be chayav, and then we're gonna say. Then you can eat it because that's what you do. Hanacha and kriyas shem. So I guess it's the most minor chiddush. I guess most minor. You know, we're not going to be as makel as possible.
Right.
Okay. So the Gemara is going to now explain. V'nid vosecha zot todo shlamim. That Shimon darshes the pasuk and your nidavos. That's referring to korban todo and korban shlamim. And Amar Rabbi Shimon. What does it come to teach us? If it comes to teach you, you get malchus, you eat it outside the walls of Yerushalayim, so then it's extra. Why? Because you can learn it, kavachomer, I mean, meiser. You can learn this halacha, kavachomer from meiser. Halobo akasuv, ela ochel betoto vishlamim, lifnei zrika shuloka. So rather, the pasuk of Vinivosea comes to teach you that if you eat toto and shlamim for zrika sadam, then you get malchus. Okay, so that's what that comes to teach you. And we're going to darshan out the pasuk of Bechoros, Zeh HaBechor. This is the first of Bechor. Amar Rishimon, Ma'ba L'Tzeh L'Amdeinu, what does it come to teach us? Im La'ochlan Chutz L'Chom, if it comes to teach you that you can eat it outside the city walls, if you get Malkus, if you eat it outside the city walls, Ka'Bechor Mi'Maiser, you can learn it from Maiser. So, Im Lifnei Zerika, if you're talking about eating the Bechor before you sprinkle the blood, that's also, you can learn a kavachomer from Toda and Shlamim, right?
What's a kavachomer?
Because the Bechor is more strict than Meister and Toda Shlamim, because Bechor is Kedushas from the Rechem. It's saying the Bechor is Kadosh from the womb. So if by Toda and Shlamim you get Malkus before Zrika, certainly for Bechor you would get Malkus from Zrika. So therefore the pasuk comes to tell you that even if you eat Bechor, even after Zerika Sadam, so then Shehu Loka, you get Malkus. Then the Gemara says, it continues to say, Bekorcha Vitzoncha in this pasuk, that's Chatas V'Asham. Amar Shimon, Maba Zelamdeinu, come teach us, Ila Ochlam Chutz L'Choma, if it comes to tell you to get Malkus feeded outside the walls, Kavachoma, be Meiser. Right? Meiser is less severe, obviously, than Chatas and Asham. Im Lifnei Zrika, if it wants to tell you that you get Malkus feeded before Zrika, that's also actually because Kavachoma from Toda and Shlamim. Right? Chatas is more severe than Toda and Shlamim. Because they're katshe katshim, right? They're katshe katshim. Im la'achar zrika, if it's after zrika, kavachomer b'chor, you learn kavachomer from b'chor. Again, for the same reason, because b'chor is katshe kalim. Halaba kasev ela ochel mechatz v'ashefil la'achar zrika chutzeklaim shuloka. Says, if you eat from the chatz and ashef, even after the zrika, outside the mikdash area, you still get malchus. So that's what it comes to teach you. Okay, so the Rav Shimon finishes up and he says, "Nidarecha zo'ola, Amar Rav Shimon, ma ba zelam." They always come to teach us. Im lo ochlat chutz lachoba. I've come to teach you get malchus if you eat it outside those city walls. So that's extra. Kavachomer mi'maiser, im lifnei zrika. Kavachomer mitoda v'shlavim. You learn from toda and shlavim. Im la'achar zrika. If you tell you get makos after the sprinkling of the blood, kavachomer mi'bechor. We learn from bechor. And then if it's im chutzeklayim outside the walls of the azara, kavachomer mi'chatas v'asham. You learn from chatas and asham. Ola is more chamor than chatas and asham because it's completely burnt. Halo ba'akasev. Wants to tell you that this is your part. This is your question, Marty.
Yeah.
So we have a lav that says that even if I forgot when you mentioned that. That's that even if you eat from the ola after the zrika, even inside the mikdash area, right? It's supposed to be burnt. So this drasha comes to tell you that there also is a lav, and so you get malchus for that as well. Okay.